Religious Radicalism and Absolutist Moderation in 16th Century France by Murray N. Rothbard. This article is excerpted from An Austrian Perspective on the History of Economic Thought, Volume 1, Economic Thought Before Adam Smith, Chapter 5, and is read by Jeff Riggenbach.
Calvin began his own Reformation after Luther, but it rapidly swept through Western Europe, triumphing not only in Switzerland, but more importantly in the Dutch Netherlands, the main commercial and financial center of Europe in the 17th century, and coming within a hair's breadth of dominating Great Britain and France. In Britain, Scotland was conquered by Calvinism in the form of the Presbyterian Church, and Calvinist Puritanism heavily influenced the Anglican Church and almost conquered England in the mid-17th century. France was rent by religious political wars during the last four decades of the 16th century, and the Calvinists, known as Huguenots, were not far from triumphing there. Though converting no more than 5% of the population, the Huguenots were extremely influential in the nobility and in pockets in northern and southwestern France. John Calvin, fully as much as Luther, preached the doctrine of absolute obedience and non-resistance to duly constituted government, regardless of how evil that government may be. But Calvin's embattled followers, enjoying rising aspirations against non-Calvinist rulers, developed justifications for resistance to evil rulers. These were first set forth in the 1550s by the English Marian exiles in Switzerland and Germany during the reign of the last Catholic monarch in England, Queen Mary. This radical tradition, including the people's right to tyrannicide, was carried on by the Huguenots in the following decades. Stimulated by the horror of the massacre of St. Bartholomew's Day in 1572, the Huguenots promptly developed libertarian theories of radical resistance against the tyranny of the crown. Some of the most notable writings are the jurist François Hautement's 1524-1590, Franco-Gallia, written in the late 1560s, but first published in 1573. The anonymous Political Discourses, 1574, and the culminating work at the end of the 1570s by Philippe Duplessis Mornay, 1549-1623, The Defense of Liberty Against Tyrants, 1579. Defending tyrannicide in particular was the Political Discourses, which bitterly attacked the so-called theologians and preachers who asserted that no one may ever lawfully kill a tyrant without a special revelation from God. The other Huguenot writers, however, were far more cautious on this touchy issue. Furthermore, three decades before the radical Spanish scholastic Juan de Mariana, the Huguenots advanced a pre-Lockean theory of popular sovereignty. In particular, Hautement warned that a people's transference of their right to rule to the king can in no way be permanent or irrevocable. On the contrary, the people and their representative bodies have the right of continual surveillance of the king, as well as of taking away his power at any time. Not only that, but the States General is supposed to have continuing day-to-day power to rule. Hautement won general Huguenot acceptance of this new creed by cloaking it in terms of Jean Calvin's original, quite contrasting, political doctrine. But Hautement's argument for original popular rule was strictly historical, and the counterattacks of the royalist writers soon riddled the historical account with gross distortions. It was necessary for the Huguenots to abandon the original Calvinist council of total civil obedience and construct a natural law theory of the original sovereignty of the people, preceding the consensual transfer to kingly rule. In short, the Huguenots had to rediscover and reappropriate the scholastic tradition of their hated Catholic opponents. Thus, in contrast to the preaching style and emphasis on divine will of the Marian exiles, Mornay and other Huguenots wrote in a logical, scholastic style and explicitly referred to Aquinas and to codifiers of the Roman law. In short, as Professor Skinner writes, there was no Calvinist theory of revolution in the 16th century. Paradoxically, the French Calvinists pioneered the development of a revolutionary theory of popular rule by grounding themselves in the natural law tradition of their Catholic adversaries. Furthermore, Occamite scholastics at Paris, for example, Jean Gerson in the early 15th century and the Englishman John Major in the early 16th, pioneered specifically the concept of sovereignty which always inheres in the people and which they can therefore take back from the king at any time. One of the pernicious effects on scholarship of Max Weber's Protestant, actually Calvinist, ethic as the creator of capitalism has already been seen. The neglect of the actual rise of capitalism in Catholic Italy, as well as in Antwerp and southern Germany. Another associated Weberian fallacy is the popular idea of Calvinism as modern and revolutionary, as the creator of radical and democratic political thought. But we have seen that Calvinist and Protestant political thought was originally statist and absolutist. Calvinism only became revolutionary and anti-tyrannical under the pressure of opposing Catholic regimes, which drove the Calvinists back to natural law and popular sovereignty, motifs in Catholic scholastic thought. An important strand of popular sovereignty was worked out by Theodore Beza, 1519-1605. Calvin's leading disciple and successor at Geneva. The great Beza, influenced by Hautmont, published The Right of Magistrates in 1574. Beza insisted that natural law revealed that the people logically and temporally preceded their rulers, so that political power originated in the body of the people. It is self-evident, Beza declared, that peoples do not come from rulers and are not created by them. Hence, the people originally decided to transfer governing powers to the rulers. An influential radical Huguenot pamphlet, The Awakener, 1574, repeated Beza's argument. The Awakener was probably written by the eminent French jurist Hugues Donneau. Man could not be naturally in subjection, the Awakener pointed out, for assemblies and groups of men existed everywhere before the creation of kings, and even today it is possible to find a people without a magistrate, but never a magistrate without a people. If man is not to be naturally free but naturally enslaved, then we must absurdly conclude that the people must have been created by their magistrates, when it is obvious to the contrary that magistrates are always created by the people. As usual, Philippe Duplessis-Mornay summed up the position with trenchant clarity. No one, he observed, is a king by nature. And furthermore, and with particular point, a king cannot rule without a people, while a people can rule itself without a king. Hence it is evident that the people must have preceded the existence of kings or positive laws, and then later submitted themselves to their dominion. Hence man's natural condition must be liberty, and we must possess freedom as a natural right, a right that can never be justifiably removed. As Mornay put it, we are all free by nature, born to hate servitude and desirous of commanding rather than yielding obedience. Further, continuing this proto-Lockean analysis, the people must have submitted themselves to governmental rule to promote their well-being. Following John Major, Mornay was clear that the kind of well-being the people advanced in setting up government was to protect their individual natural rights. To Mornay, as to Major, a right over something was being free to hold and dispose of it, that is, a right in the object as property. The people retain such rights when they establish polities, which they willingly create in order to ensure greater security for their property. These rights of property include the natural right of everyone in their own persons and their liberties. Governments are supposed to maintain those rights, but often become the main transgressors. Mornay was careful to point out that the people, in establishing governments, cannot alienate their sovereignty. Instead, they always remain in the position of the owner of their sovereignty, which they merely delegate to the ruler. The whole people, therefore, continues to be greater than the king and is above him. On the other hand, Mornay and the other Huguenots were constrained to temper their revolutionary radicalism. First, they made it clear, in a manner wholly consistent with their view that the whole people retain their sovereignty, that the people are not really the people as a whole, but their representatives in the magistrates and the States General. The people have necessarily given their sword to these institutions, and therefore, when we speak of the people collectively, we mean those who receive authority from the people, that is, the magistrates below the king and the assembly of the estates. Moreover, in practice, these alleged representatives keep the enforcement of the king's promises in their hands, since that power of enforcement is a property of the authorities that have the power of the people in them. Furthermore, according to the Huguenots, the sovereign right is only in the people as a whole and not in any individual, so that tyrannicide by one subject is never permissible. The people as a whole are above the king, but the king is above any single individual. More concretely, since sovereignty rests in the institutions of duly constituted assemblies or magistrates, only these institutions embodying the sovereign power of the people can properly resist the tyranny of the king. In a few short years, the rebellion of the Dutch against Spanish rule reached a climax in 1580 and 1581. An anonymous Calvinist pamphlet, A True Warning, appeared in Antwerp in 1581, which asserted that God has created men free, and that the only power over men is whatever they themselves have granted. If the king breaks the conditions of his rule, then the people's representatives have the right and the duty to depose him and to resume their original rights. The leader of the Dutch rebellion, William the Silent, Prince of Orange, adopted the same view in these same years, both in his own apology presented to the States General at the end of 1580, and in the official Edict of the States General issued the following July. It should be noted that the apology was largely written by Mornay and other Huguenot advisers. The edict declared that the King of Spain had forfeited his sovereignty, and that the United Netherlands had at last been obliged, in conformity with the law of nature, to exercise their unquestioned right to resist tyranny and to pursue such means as necessary to secure their rights, privileges, and liberties.